Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record Program 409, titled Let's Make a Deal, Part 2, being recorded on May 11th of 2003. This program supplements For the Record 403 and, to a lesser extent, For the Record 395, and we're going to be taking a look at some interesting deals involving people in the Bush administration and also some interesting maneuvering vis-a-vis the recent war in Iraq and some questions about just who will be cashing in, so to speak, or at least staying in the chips as a result of that war. The For the Record programs are being archived on Real Audio by sister station WFMU. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL that is linked both to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. There are long, detailed article-length descriptions, rigorously annotated, of the For the Record programs in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. The other broadcasts I've done over the years are available from Spitfire as well. I do not get money from this arrangement. By the way, radio stations that would like to air the For the Record programs should contact Spitfire, and the CDs will be sent to them free of charge. We're going to begin by taking a look at a deal that was swung by the Zurich-based engineering company ABB, and this particular deal was for light water nuclear reactors that were provided to North Korea. One of the things that's interesting about this is that Donald Rumsfeld, the current Secretary of Defense, was on the board of directors of ABB when this particular deal was swung, and it's interesting that now North Korea is a focal point as part of the axis of evil for the ire of the Bush administration, and yet it was Donald Rumsfeld, as a director of ABB, who helped to make North Korea nuclear capable. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from Fortune Magazine's issue of April 28th of 2003. This is an article by Richard Behar, B-E-H-A-R. It's headlined, Rumsfeld, Rummy's North Korea Connection. What did Donald Rumsfeld know about ABB's deal to build nuclear reactors there, and why won't he talk about it? This article reads in part as follows. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld rarely keeps his opinions to himself. He tends not to compromise with his enemies, and he clearly disdains the communist regime in North Korea. So it's surprising that there is no clear public record of his views on the controversial 1994 deal in which the U.S. agreed to provide North Korea with two light water nuclear reactors in exchange for Pyongyang ending its nuclear weapons program. What's even more surprising about Rumsfeld's silence is that he sat on the board of the company that won a $200 million contract to provide the design and key components for the reactors. That company is Zurich-based engineering giant ABB, which signed the contract in early 2000, well before Rumsfeld gave up his board seat and joined the Bush administration. Skipping down, Rumsfeld declined requests by Fortune to elaborate on his role, but ABB spokesman Bjorn Edlund has told Fortune that, quote, board members were informed about this project, unquote. And other ABB officials say there is no way such a large and high-stakes project involving complex questions of liability would not have come to the attention of the board. Quote, a written summary would probably have gone to the board before the deal was signed, unquote, says Robert Newman, a former president of ABB's U.S. nuclear division who spearheaded the project. Quote, I'm sure they were aware, unquote. Fortune contacted 15 ABB board members who served at the time the company was bidding for the Pyongyang contract, and all but one declined to comment. That director, who asked not to be identified, says he's convinced that ABB's chairman at the time, Percy Barnevik, told the board about the reactor project in the mid-1990s. Quote, this was a major thing for ABB, unquote, the former director says, again quoting, and extensive political lobbying was done, unquote. The director recalls being told that Rumsfeld was asked, quote, to lobby in Washington, unquote, on ABB's behalf in the mid-1990s because a rival American company had complained about a foreign-owned firm getting the work. Although he couldn't provide details, Göran Lundberg, who ran ABB's power generation business until 1995, says he's, quote, pretty sure that at some point Don was involved, unquote, since it was not unusual to seek help from board members, again quoting, when we needed contacts with the U.S. government, unquote. Again, very interesting in light of the current saber-rattling that's going on vis-a-vis the North Korean nuclear weapons program, although light water reactors are not generally viewed, as this article explains, as optimum technology for assisting a nuclear weapons program. That can, in fact, be done. And in the background, I have looked at the possible saber-rattling vis-a-vis North Korea and also SARS as factors which are basically threatening the U.S. from an economic standpoint by perhaps causing a weaker dollar or increasing the U.S. current accounts deficit and perhaps precipitating a Japanese stock market crash, which in turn could create a liquidity crisis for Japanese banks, which hold 15% of America's foreign debt. That could lead to a fire sale, so to speak, on American T-bills, thereby bankrupting the U.S. economy. Something to think about in connection with that deal. Research credit on the following also goes to a member of the listening audience. This is the Cheryl Seal Special Report. The woman who thwarted Hunt for Osama bin Laden is acting governor of Baghdad. And this is also titled, Who is Barbara Bodine and Why is She Acting Governor of Baghdad? And again, this was researched for us by a member of the audience who is a freelance journalist. The article reads in part, Barbara Bodine, who helped thwart FBI veteran John O'Neill back when he was hot on the trail of Osama bin Laden before 9/11, has been named governor of Baghdad. Surprised to hear it? Little wonder this story was swept as far under the rug as the Bush administration could sweep it. I saw one story in Fox News Online, but that was quickly scrubbed. Why? Because within this story was a link to an article I wrote in 2001 detailing Bodine's role in derailing the hunt for bin Laden after the USS Cole tragedy. So while we hear about retired General Garner, unquote, who is in fact a very unretired CEO of a huge defense contracting company, S.Y. Coleman, we haven't heard the name Bodine mentioned until now. Yet Bodine arrived in Qusar on April 8th. Here's a link to the story citing her position as, quote, mayor of Baghdad from a U.S. embassy site, as long as it remains unscrubbed, and then there are instructions as to the URL. This will be included in the written description for FTR 409. Continuing. Choosing a woman governor in a Muslim country was calculated to foment trouble with the conservative Shiites, worse, a woman skilled in cover-ups for right-wing bosses. There is already a conflict brewing between Bodine and Iraqi Mohammed Mohsen Zubaydi, who says he is the governor of Baghdad. By the way, he was forcibly removed by U.S. troops subsequent to the publication of this article. Continuing. This story was in the Washington Post today, but notice how extremely vague all references to Bodine are. The reporter does not come right out and say Bodine is, in fact, the designated governor of Baghdad. Skipping down about Bodine's political background and about her role in thwarting the late John O'Neill's investigation of bin Laden. Until he resigned in August of 2001, John O'Neill was the director of anti-terrorism for the FBI's New York office. O'Neill had worked on the investigations of the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993 and the attacks on the American embassies in Africa in 1998. He became one of the world's top experts on Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. O'Neill believed that, quote, all the answers, everything needed to dismantle Osama bin Laden's organization can be found in Saudi Arabia, unquote. Yet the Bush administration blocked O'Neill's efforts to investigate the Saudi ties to bin Laden. The main obstacles to investigating Islamic terrorism, asserted O'Neill, were U.S. oil corporate interests and the role played by Saudi Arabia in it. For example, Bush blocked an FBI investigation of the bin Laden family and kept his family's business ties to the bin Ladens as secret as possible. Among those business dealings were bin Laden investments in the Carlyle Group and connections between bin Laden and George W. Bush's first oil companies. By the way, I've talked about those in many broadcasts. And the Carlyle Group is going to become the focal point of a discussion in the second half of this program. Continuing. It must have truly enraged O'Neill if he knew that Osama bin Laden had flown to Dubai for 10 days for treatment at the American hospital, where he was visited by local CIA agent Larry Mitchell on July 12th. O'Neill was very well aware of the warnings that came out in the summer of 2001, but it was obvious that he was considered more of a liability than an asset to the oil-obsessed Bush administration. Back in 2000, O'Neill had been investigating the bombing of the USS Cole, for which he was sure bin Laden was responsible. However, the U.S. ambassador to Yemen, one Barbara Bodine, hamstrung FBI efforts at every turn, publicly calling O'Neill a liar, refusing to allow his men to be armed with more than small handguns, and in general, crippling the investigation. Although Bodine claims she was trying to keep diplomatic relations running smoothly, her history shows otherwise. Barbara Bodine has served primarily under right-wing old boys and in areas where their oil interests are being served. Under Reagan, she served as deputy principal officer in Baghdad, Iraq. Under Bush Sr., she served as deputy chief of mission in Kuwait and was there during the Gulf War. So note, by the way, her heritage with Reagan and the elder George Bush. An interesting woman to be frustrating John O'Neill's investigation into bin Laden. She has also worked for Bob Dole and far more ominously for Henry Kissinger. Now, under Bush Jr., she is in Yemen impeding an FBI investigation that focused on the son of a Bush family business associate. And as I've spoken about in so many broadcasts, that is Osama bin Laden. What makes Bodine's actions toward O'Neill particularly despicable is that she was said to be in part to blame for the Cole disaster. Even though she had been warned that the risk of attacks on Americans in the Yemen area were extremely high at that time, the Cole entered port under the lowest grade of security permitted in the Middle East with no warning to the destroyer. A top military analyst for the Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency quit in protest the day after the bombing because of Bodine and General Anthony Zinn's decision to allow the Cole to come into the port. About that time, O'Neill's name had been proposed by Richard Clark as Clark's successor as terrorism czar at the National Security Council. But a very mysterious incident that had happened nearly a year before was dredged up and used to blow that possibility out of the water. In November of 2000, at a retirement seminar in Tampa, O'Neill left his briefcase for a few moments in the convention room to go around the corner to use the phone. When he returned in a few minutes, the briefcase containing some papers considered classified was gone. It soon turned up, but the incident was seized upon as an excuse to guarantee O'Neill would not get promoted. Was it a real theft, or a setup to squeeze out the man who asked too many questions about Saudis and oil? O'Neill had finally had enough and quit. And again, John O'Neill situation is discussed in numerous broadcasts, including, for the record, 335 and 336. And I would also note, it's 336 and 337. And I've talked about O'Neill at considerable length in other broadcasts about September 11th. We talked about John O'Neill briefly in our discussion with John Loftus. But again, note that Barbara Bodine, and today's papers, by the way, mentioned that she is going to be replaced as acting governor of Baghdad. Note that this is the woman who basically frustrated John O'Neill's investigation into bin Laden. She is a Republican, quote, old boy, unquote, under the circumstances, with political roots running back to the Reagan administrations and the elder George Bush, and Henry Kissinger and Bob Dole, among others. So one wonders whether perhaps this position in Baghdad was a payback for Barbara Bodine's past efforts on behalf of the Bushes and the bin Ladens, their business partners. In For the Record program number 395 and later in program number 403, I asked the question about whether perhaps the Saudi links to September 11th would be actively suppressed by the Bush administration in connection or in exchange for the Saudis allowing the U.S. to use bases in Saudi Arabia during the Iraq War. That was, in fact, done. And one of the things that we looked at in 403 was speculation by the Financial Times that in exchange for this, the Saudis were asking for influence in post-war Iraq, specifically for the retention of elements of the Ba'ath Party and for the suppression, or at least relative neutralization, of the Shiite majority in Iraq, one of the many problems that faces the post-war occupation. I also asked whether perhaps there would be a deal in which members of the bin Laden family and their enormous construction firm would get cut in one way or another on some of the action, so to speak, in the reconstruction of post-war Iraq. I noted the Fluor Corporation, one of whose major subsidiaries, Daniel Realty, is part of Saudi bin Laden Group, and that the Fluor Corporation was one of the major bidders for the reconstruction contracts in Iraq. We will be taking a look at more bin Laden family links to some of the major companies that appear to be involved in the reconstruction later on. But again, noting the line of speculation that I have engaged in For the Records 395 and in 403 about the possibility that Ba'ath Party elements will be retained and that the Shia majority may be suppressed in post-war Iraq in exchange for suppression of the Saudi links to September 11th, we look at the following from the New York Times of Thursday, May 8th of 2003. This is an article by Patrick E. Tyler. Its headline, Hussein Loyalists Rise Again, Enraging Iraqis. It reads in part, hundreds of Iraqi doctors, nurses, and health workers demonstrated today against a decision by the American authorities here to appoint Ali al-Janabi, a senior Ba'ath Party member, to be Minister of Health. The demonstration by doctors in starched white coats was the latest indication of rising concern over the enduring influence of some members of the party that was long the vehicle for Saddam Hussein to impose his terror on Iraq. And again, that is from the New York Times of Thursday, May 8th. It remains to be seen how many Ba'ath Party functionaries do get returned to power in Iraq. It'll also be interesting to see whether, in fact, there has been the quid pro quo that I suspected may have taken place. Certainly, a much-anticipated Saudi cabinet shakeup and reform has turned out to be largely cosmetic in nature, perhaps indicating that the reactionary nature of the Wahhabi regime in Saudi Arabia, when the House of Saud will be retained intact. There hasn't been much discussion of this in the American media, which is not altogether surprising, but it was brought up in the Financial Times of Thursday, May 1st of 2003. This is an article by Heba Safay in Riyadh. It's headlined, Saudi Cabinet Reshuffle Disappoints Liberals as Key Ministers Remain. It reads in part as follows. A long-awaited cabinet reshuffle in Saudi Arabia has brought into the government only five new faces, disappointing liberals who had thought that the reshape would herald the start of reform. The reshuffle kept in place Ali el-Naimi, the oil minister, and the princes from the ruling Al Saud family who hold the strategic portfolios of defense, foreign affairs, and the interior. Quote, it is much less than everyone expected, unquote, said a Western diplomat. Quote, no key minister has been changed, unquote. He added that there had been speculation the reshuffle would mark the start of a process of reform that had been debated in newspaper columns and within elite circles in recent weeks, skipping down. Many liberals, however, fear that reform, if it comes, will be too little, too late. They say urgent steps are needed to deal effectively with the problems of a predominantly young society suffering from a host of ills ranging from unemployment to religious extremism. The cosmetic cabinet reshuffle is certain to heighten their concern. So is that nominal and apparently cosmetic cabinet reshuffle an indication of retrenchment on the part of the Saudi regime? Has, in fact, the deal that I speculated about in For the Records 395 and 403 been cut? An interesting question to ponder. We should note that the Fluor Corporation is not the only major company bidding for reconstruction contracts in Iraq that has business connections with the bin Laden family. Following article is from The New Yorker of May 5th of 2003. This article is by Jane Mayer. It's titled Department of Connections, the Contractors, and it reads in part, skipping down, "Now, there is a new and demonstrable connection, but it is not the kind that the Bush administration had in mind. In fact, it is more likely to fuel the speculations of conspiracy theorists than it is to put their fears to rest. It turns out that a money trail runs, albeit rather circuitously, from the lucrative business of rebuilding Iraq to the fortune behind Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden's estranged family, a sprawling, extraordinarily wealthy Saudi Arabian dynasty, is a substantial investor in a private equity firm founded by the Bechtel Group of San Francisco. Bechtel is also the global construction and engineering company to which the U.S. government recently awarded the first major multi-million-dollar contract to reconstruct war-ravaged Iraq. In a closed competitive bidding process, the United States Agency for International Development chose Bechtel to rebuild the major elements of Iraq's infrastructure, including its roads, railroads, airports, hospitals and schools, and its water and electrical systems. In the first phase of the contract, the U.S. government will pay Bechtel nearly $35 million, but experts say that the cost is likely to reach $680 million during the next year and a half." By the way, it says here the U.S. government. Let me interpret that slightly. That's you, ladies and gentlemen. That is the taxpayers. The U.S. government doesn't have any money in and of itself. That will be you and I. Continuing. "When the contract was awarded 2 weeks ago, the administration did not mention that the bin Laden family has an ongoing relationship with Bechtel. The bin Ladens have a $10 million stake in the Fremont Group, a San Francisco-based company formerly called Bechtel Investments, which was, until 1986, a formal subsidiary of Bechtel." By the way, it is made clear later on in the article that the bin Laden family, the Fremont Group, does not make public its stake. And even though it's far larger than $10 million, it is unclear whether the bin Ladens have enriched their investment in Fremont Group. The Fremont Group's website, which makes no mention of the bin Laden's, notes that, quote, "Though now independent, Fremont enjoys a close relationship with Bechtel," unquote. A spokeswoman for the company confirmed that Fremont's, quote, "majority ownership is the Bechtel family," unquote. And a list of the corporate board of directors shows substantial overlap. Five of Fremont's eight directors are also directors of Bechtel. One Fremont director, Riley Bechtel, is the chairman and chief executive officer of the Bechtel Group and is a member of the Bush administration. He was appointed this year to serve on the president's export council. In addition, George Shultz, the secretary of state in the Reagan administration, serves as a director both of Fremont and of the Bechtel Group, where he once was president and still is listed as senior counselor. So note that one Fremont director, Riley Bechtel, chairman and chief executive of the Bechtel Group, and a member of the Bush administration. Note that the bin Laden family has a stake in this, for all intents and purposes, Bechtel subsidiary, the Fremont Group. It looks like the Bechtel firm is going to be subcontracting out much of this taxpayer money, or money that's going to be coming out of our pockets. New York Times of April 19th of 2003 has this article by Diana B. Enriquez. "Bechtel subcontracts are expected to include non-U.S. companies and employ Iraqis." It reads in part, "Although the Bechtel Group in San Francisco has been selected as the prime contractor for up to $680 million worth of reconstruction work in Iraq, a substantial percentage of that money, half or more by some estimates, will actually flow to subcontractors, which are expected to rely heavily on Iraqi workers, government and company officials," said yesterday. Quote, "Bechtel has told us that they plan on using Iraqi resources to the greatest degree possible," unquote, said Luke Zahner, a spokesman for the United States Agency for International Development, which awarded the contract on Thursday. And I would also note that apparently Arab firms will be getting in on some of the subcontracting, whether that includes Fremont Group and the Saudi Bin Laden Group or some of its subsidiaries like the Daniel's Realty subsidiary of Fluor, remains to be seen. Following article is from the Wall Street Journal of May 6th of 2003. It's by David Luhnow, L-U-H-N-O-W, headlined, Arab Firms Want In on Iraq Action. Subtitled, Helping Nation They View as a Future Regional Power May Aid Whole. Mideast Dateline Amman, Jordan, it reads in part as follows, skipping down, speaking of the Arab firms getting in on the subcontracting, who knows, perhaps Bin Laden group will be in on this. So far, the signs are encouraging. Bechtel Group Incorporated, the San Francisco infrastructure group that has landed a contract valued at $680 million, has said it plans to hand much of its work to other companies, including those from the Middle East. Bechtel has a long history in the region and employs more than 1,000 workers in Arab countries. So will, in fact, the Bin Laden group be getting in on the action at Bechtel? That is something that very much remains to be seen. Inside two of this program, we're going to be taking a look at other deals involving people from the Bush administration, people who figure in it now, people also with roots going back to Richard Nixon, to his Dirty Tricks squad, to the Republican ethnic outreach organization that incorporated Nazis and Central and Eastern European fascist collaborators. We've looked at that in the past. And we should note that some of the more recent additions to that Republican ethnic milieu involve Wahhabi-related elements, which in turn have connections to the milieu of Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, and Hamas. That, however, in the second side of the program. The various broadcasts that I've done over the years are available from Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And you can reach them in order to get programs distributed to radio stations. CDs are distributed to radio stations for free. Also, on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website, there are long article-length annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs, and the description for 409 should be up within a week or so. Note that sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across the river from where the World Trade Center used to be, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. There is also a longer URL which features the older programs for download only at a longer URL that is linked to both the wfmu.org/Dave Emory website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 409, Let's Make a Deal, Part 2, being recorded on May 11th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.